the lost sheep, the lost coin, the lost son, and the question mark, what else is lost? So I thought I'd keep that from you until later. Jesus spent a lot of time talking people through examples or stories or parables which all had a heavenly meaning. So we could read them and we could say, yeah, I can see how that fits into God's thinking. And Jesus was in the middle of being criticized because he was meeting with sinners and tax people. Let me find the right bit. Now the tax collectors and sinners were all gathering round to hear Jesus. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered, "This man welcomes sinners and eats with them." So why were tax collectors sinners? Or why were they considered to be sinners, as opposed to our impeccable tax system which we have today? Well, these people were employed by the state, and they were there to collect taxes. And the difficulty was that they set the tax level depending on what they felt the individual could pay. And then they took their cut. So they were seen as being quite kind of despicable in the way that they could coin money in. And the state certainly wasn't going to bother them because they took what some considered to be excessive fees for collection. So they weren't popular. And they were actually classed together, tax collectors and sinners. Well, why did Jesus come into the world? He came for the sinners. He didn't come for those that thought they were well above, they were kind of okay and they didn't need to worry. Jesus came for the sinners. And as you read his work for the 3 years that he was ministering, he spent more time looking at sinners and talking to sinners and being with them than with anybody else. But he had a few parables. And the first one was the parable of the lost sheep. And these three are very different in their nature. So he wasn't repeating himself. He said, suppose one of you had 100 sheep and loses one of them. Well, 99% retention ain't bad. Am I supposed to send it? It's there, isn't it? Yeah, this technology, there you go. I'll keep an eye on it. 99 sheep left isn't bad, is it? If I had 100 sheep and I lost one, would I really be so concerned? Except the shepherd in those days had a personal relationship with all his sheep. He would lead them, not drive them. He would lead them to the best pasture. He would lead them to the best place to get the purest water. So when he counted the 99, he must have thought, I wonder which one it is, although he probably knew. And it says he left the 99 out in the countryside and he went off and he searched. And it was pretty obsessive, that search. He was not going to give up until he found the sheep. And he did find it. And he went back and took it back to the others, and then he went home and said, "Rejoice with me. I have found the sheep that was lost. I'm now back up to 100. I'm so happy, and I want you to rejoice with me." Good job they didn't have lamb on the menu, but that's another story, isn't it? So they found the sheep and they had the celebration. "Come and rejoice with me, I have found the sheep." Good, isn't it? The lost coin. Now, why do we bother with this as a parable? Because it probably was going to be in the house anyway, and they don't walk around on their own. It had obviously been dropped. And you got the impression that over the next few days we may find it. I don't know what the coin was worth. Was it vast? Or relative to her income, was it a large amount of money? But she didn't wait for two or three days to just quietly wander around the house and find. She had an obsessive search. She was determined to find that coin. And when she finally found it, she called her neighbours in. "Come and rejoice with me, for I have found the coin which was lost." I suspect it was probably quite a valuable coin, because if they did too much celebrating, they may have spent it. But the fact it was missing, she knew it was missing, and she was determined to go and find it. The lost coin. The lost son, very, very different. Very different actions, a very different scene. Because this man who had two sons, and the younger one said to his father, "Give me my share of the estate." Now my son and daughter visited me today, and me and Tracy, and you know, we kind of wondered, and they said, we're coming down, and one's from Sheffield and one's from Basingstoke, so they travelled quite a distance, and they just took us out for lunch. Brought the granddaughter down, so it's quite a nice time. And I'm thinking, why? And I came to a conclusion that it probably came to value the house. But I'm being unkind. This young man had no rights at all to his inheritance. By definition, an inheritance comes when the owner dies. And yet he felt somehow that he wanted his inheritance. If he went to his father and said, "I want my share of the estate," came to me, I would have said no. Or words to that effect. But this man, he got his two sons together and he divided his property between them. And it says that the young man got together all he had, set off to a distant country, and then squandered his wealth in wild living. When there's a lot of money, there's a lot of friends, aren't there? Have you ever noticed that? Where there's a will, there's a lot of people. He spent it all in wild living. He would have had lots of friends who helped him. And he would have been... We're still on the right one, aren't we? it would have been a little while before he got himself to a point where he had no money left. And there he is in a far country, penniless. And it says he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country who sent him to his fields to feed the pigs. And it said he actually got to a point where he wanted to eat the pig food because he was so hungry. But nobody gave him anything. Now, the difference between this situation and the others is that the father let him go. He wanted to go. The father would not force his will on him. Neither did he go and look for him. We read that he sat at the end of the drive, watching down the road, day after day after day. He was waiting for the son to come back. But he wasn't going to go and drag him back, and he wasn't going to take any action against him. And the turning point was when he came to his senses. He said, "How many of my father's hired servants have food to spare, and here I am starving to death? So I will go home, and I'll say to my father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. Make me like one of your hired servants." So he set off to go home. And we know his father was watching down the road because it says, when he saw him a long way off, he ran to his son to welcome him home. Isn't that fantastic? That patience and that willingness to obviously forgive with your actions. And the son said to him, "Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son." And as he's drawing breath for the second bit, make me one of your hired servants, never gets chance to get to that. But the father said to his servants, "Quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. All signs of belonging, all signs of sonship." He didn't lose his relationship with his father. And I often think, as they were coming up the drive together, the fatted calf in the field looked and said, "Oh no." But he said, "Kill the fatted calf. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." So they began to celebrate. Isn't that a nice ending to a story? Does that mean the young man had many possessions? No, he had nothing. But he would live with his father, and he would live with his son, and he'd work on the farm, and he would have enough to live. But he had he'd lost and used up all the inheritance. Meanwhile, outside, the elder son, and when he came to the house, he heard music and dancing, and he said, "What's going on? Your brother's come home, and your father's killed the fatted calf because he has him back sound and well." And the elder son threw a tantrum. Why? He took the inheritance, he's gone off and spent it, he's come back, and we seem to be going overboard to welcome him. And the elder brother became angry and refused to go in. And he said to his father, "All these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders. Yet you never gave me even a young goat so that I could celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours, who has squandered your property with prostitutes, comes home, you fill the fatter calf for him. My son, the father said, you are always with me, and everything I have is yours. You've still got all your inheritance. Everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad because his brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. The lost coin, the lost sheep, and the lost son. So, what's the one with the question mark? It's all the lost souls that are out there in our villages who don't know God, and we have a job to do. You and I have got a job to do. And before you come with the I'm too old, I don't have time and everything else, just forget all that. Because God will not ask us to do anything that we can't do. And what he wants us to do, he wants us to go and search for those people and bring them in. He wants to see them reconciled to himself. He's like the Father watching and waiting, but he's not going to go and interfere. But he's commanded us to go and find the lost and bring them in. And at that point, there will be a celebration. See, every time these things end, there's always a celebration. And so it will be when we meet with Jesus and go to heaven. Now, that's going to be a celebration of all. So what's the command for each one of us? It's to go into all the world to preach the gospel and to make disciples. Now, we're going to all the world and we preach the gospel. Some of us don't like doing that, you know. We think it's hard work. We think it's intrusive. But there is another way. And often many, many ministers have used the phrase, go out and preach the gospel, and if you must, speak. But you preach the gospel not just by words, it's by your actions. It's by the way you live. It's by your response to different situations. And that's what will attract people to say, what's the difference with you that you do these things? At which point, we have all the answers, don't we? Or we should have. Because we have the experience of meeting with God and of accepting Jesus as our Saviour. So we have to go into all the world. Doesn't say specifically West Camel, but haven't we often said we need more people from the village to come into this church? Well, why don't we go and attract them? Not preach to them, not knock on the doors and, you know, become a nuisance, but just simply by doing more of what we're doing now, like we do the carols on the green, we do the Easter on the green. We're taking out the gospel to those people rather than just sitting here and saying, well, if you want to come, you're welcome. So maybe we need to find more ways of getting out on the green, of attracting people in because they want to come, not because we're beating the doors down and telling them they're sinners and they need salvation. It seemed to stop working a few years ago, did that one? And then we want to make disciples. But are we disciples? Do we do everything that God asks us to do? Or do we just live our own lives and leave it to other people? A true disciple, you know, will be out there with that obsession that we saw with the lost coin, the lost son, and there are sheep. So we want to be disciples. We want to attract people in by the way we live, and we give them the gospel in a way that they can absorb it. And then we want to turn them into disciples. That means helping, supporting, teaching. Are we ready to do that? I'm sure we will when people come in the door and find that we need that. Make disciples. And then one day, Jesus is coming back again. That's for sure. And there's going to be such a celebration, the like of which we've never seen. Amen.